This is Josh Sumby, and I'm a sales agronomist for CHS Ag Services in Drayton, North Dakota. We're pleased to bring you this update from the Red River Farm Network. CHS Ag Services, providing solutions for your success.
Wednesday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. I'm Tyler Donaldson, along with Jamie Dickerman. Temperatures will stay cold across the northern plains today, with highs in the 20s and wind chills in the low teens. Sunshine is expected, and Thanksgiving Day will be dry under high pressure, but morning lows will drop into the teens and afternoon highs will only reach the low 20s, making it the best travel day of the week. Black Friday and Saturday will see morning temperatures in the single digits and highs in the teens to low 20s. Another storm system could bring accumulating snow to the southern parts of the region on Friday evening into Saturday, although the track is still uncertain. Cold conditions continue through the weekend, with lows near 10 degrees and highs in the upper teens to low 20s.
Well, the cold weather and snow here and for much of the Red River Valley, and retired NDSU Extension Associate Professor of Livestock Stewardship, Jerry Stelka, says that means it's just about time for fall weaning.
Generally speaking, most guys have started calving a little bit later to avoid some of this rougher weather that is normal for North Dakota. Except for the seed stock people, many of them still calve earlier so they can sell yearling bulls. But, you know, I know there's been weaning going on. We haven't weaned yet, primarily because our calves are born a little later. And also, we'd prefer to wean them on the frozen ground instead of mud or wet or sometime. Pen conditions like that. So we'd prefer to have the ground a little frozen before we wean yet.
Stucker reminds ranchers to reduce calf stress before weaning.
One of the biggest things that we sometimes forget is, if at all possible, this is before weaning. I'll put the cows and all the calves together in one spot, if at all possible. And I'm not saying everybody can do this. But when you do that, that relieves some of the commingling. And I use that term to mean we're putting calves together that don't know each other. So if you put all the cows and calves together so that the calves get to know one another, then that stress of having unfamiliar calves together at weaning is removed. And so the health at weaning, post-weaning, I should say, is going to be much better when you can bring all the groups together.
Financial stress remains severe across farm country. American Farm Bureau Federation Vice President of Public and Economic Analysis John Newton says that high input costs and lower commodity prices continue to squeeze producers.
Input costs have increased dramatically over the last few years, up in some cases 30, 40, 50%. But at the same time, commodity prices have come crashing down. For many crops, they're at historically low levels. Trade has slowed, and the effect is we've had margins that have been at or below break even for many crops and specialty crops for many years in a row, and that's starting to impact farm financial conditions.
Newton says weakened trade conditions have amplified the pressure on farm balance sheets.
As the Chinese backed out of the market, that put further pressure on prices. As farmers were harvesting a crop, many of them didn't have storage and had to sell at harvest time lows. So even though we've got a framework in place and the Chinese are starting to buy product, for a lot of growers, the economic benefits of these frameworks may come too late.
Sign-up is open for multiple USDA Farm Disaster Assistance Programs, and Ag Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation Richard Fordyce says producers should look closely at new options available under this year's American Relief Act.
It's going to be paying the shallow losses. An indemnity didn't trigger, but it was close to triggering, so we'll come in and pick up part of that. Folks that weren't indemnified at all, so people that didn't have or weren't able to purchase any kind of crop insurance product, help with assistance there as well.
Fordyce says the milk loss program and the on-farm stored commodity loss program also offer targeted help for weather-related losses.
The milk loss program that's going to pay milk producers that had to dump milk due to a qualifying natural disaster. So, like, as an example, the dairy had milk cows. There was a storm. Roads were impassable. The truck couldn't make it to the dairy to pick up the milk, so the milk had to be dumped. That is the program where we're paying for that dumped milk or lost milk.
SDRP Stage 1 and Stage 2 sign-up runs through April 30th. The Milk Loss Program and On-Farm Stored Commodity Loss Program sign-up ends January 23rd. Details and eligibility information are available through local FSA offices. You can also go online to fsa.usda.gov.
As Thanksgiving approaches, Minnesota turkey farmers remain vigilant against highly pathogenic avian influenza. Minnesota Turkey Growers Executive Director Ashley Coles says HPAI continues to shape daily decision-making on turkey farms.
Yeah, so right now the only real tool that farmers have in their toolbox to combat highly pathogenic avian influenza is robust biosecurity, and our farmers are really good at robust biosecurity. They're also innovative, looking at things like turkey lasers and other wild bird deterrents to keep wild birds, which are what spread high path avian influenza into commercial poultry, away from barns.
Cole says growers continue pushing for additional tools, including vaccination.
Hold up when it comes to vaccines is the conversation with our trading partners. So HPAI, or high path, is a foreign animal disease, and it's a global disease. And so the expectation is of countries who have the disease to stamp out the disease. And so the issue is, when you vaccinate, are you then no longer stamping out the disease on a global effort to get rid of the disease? So that's the biggest hold up, is if a country shifts from the stamp out approach to vaccinating their birds, it's what's next, right? So we're going to continue to stamp out the disease. We have that expectation of all countries. And so shifting into a vaccine strategy is something that's going to take time because we want to do it right the first time.
Minnesota Department of Agriculture now accepting applications for two agri-grants designed to help farmers improve biosecurity and strengthen their operations against extreme weather. The PROTECT grant supports livestock producers with up to $10,000 for avian influenza prevention equipment, while the PREPARE grant offers up to $10,000 for projects that boost resilience to drought, flooding, hail, and severe storms. Both programs have $500,000 available and will prioritize farmers with 10 years or less experience. Applications are due by 4 p.m. January 15th, and the state expects to award 50 to 60 grants per program once contracts are finalized in May of 2026.
Mexico remains the United States' largest agricultural trade partner, according to USDA Undersecretary for Trade and Foreign Agricultural Affairs Luke Lindberg. A recent trade mission there is already generating major business opportunities for U.S. agriculture.
We had with us 41 U.S. businesses, 33 ag cooperator groups, 6 State Departments of Agriculture, 150 total participants who participated in over 500 business-to-business matchmaking meetings.
Lindberg says the mission's already delivering measurable returns.
We are already projecting from that mission $48 million worth of 12-month sales, which is huge, and we expect that number to grow even more.
Total U.S. agricultural export sales to Mexico surpassed $30 billion last year, reinforcing the critical importance of the trade relationship. Go to the Red River Farm Network's website, rrfn.com, to sign up for the weekly FarmNet News newsletter. You can also download this broadcast and follow us on Facebook and X. It's all at rrfn.com. This is the Red River Farm Network.
Farm news on the Red River Farm Network. Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley says China's recent soybean purchases could signal improving trade momentum, but he cautions U.S. farmers have learned not to rely too heavily on Beijing's promises.
I have not had conversation with anybody in Washington, D.C., but over a week, I've heard originally that when China bought about 1 million metric tons, that it was a show of good faith. And since then, I've heard that between now and the end of the year, they're going to buy about 12 million metric tons. If they do that, I think it's a real show of good faith.
Grassley says any additional Chinese buying would help, but farmers are still facing losses, even with soybean prices improving slightly.
It's very good that the President of the United States has worked hard to get our soybean market back with China, but I wish that his economic advisors in the White House would not advise him to say that just because we increased our sales to China and soybeans are up $1, that it's a famine to feast for the farmers, because you still aren't making a profit.
National Sorghum Producers Chair Amy Franz says growers are facing both strong yields and challenging market conditions, especially on the trade front.
There are. With the increase of inputs across the board, we always see those go up, rarely ever see them go down. And of course, we see there's been a hurt in the prices for our sorghum, so we continue to work on that front. But yeah, it is. It's a bittersweet to see these unexpected yields, but then where do we go with this bumper crop?
France says trade remains the biggest pressure point for growers.
The elephant in the room is China for us. 70 to 90% of our sorghum bushels were exported to China, and I emphasize were, so exports are down 97%. We have seen that momentum pretend or act like they want to come back to the market, just getting signals. But signals are one thing. Actual boats moving on the water is a completely different thing. We did see a small quantity ship to China. We're hopeful that the green light is on and we can get that going again. Our farmers desperately need it. We need China, but we also need to diversify markets as well.
Kleist Commodities owner Al Kleist says the grains are trading higher off of good export sales.
Kind of, we saw China come in overnight by 10, 12, I've heard as much as 14 cargoes of beans. So I was surprised that that was not more positive right from the get-go. Seasonal traders are buying corn in here. If you look at when corn markets have bottomed quite off, it's in the first notice day, right around that time period, the last several years. And so we have some end user buying in here. And with the winter storm, there's very little grain moving.
Cattle markets trading higher across the board after recovering from news of the Tyson packing plant closure in Nebraska.
Monday, we had the announcement by Tyson. They're shutting down the packing plant in Nebraska in January. I was just amazed. I think the market totally overreacted. Hopefully none of the listeners panicked and sold on that day, because since then we've seen the market come back. And futures are now trading at a huge discount to the cash market, especially when you look at feeder cattle prices. And so that gap between the low futures price versus the cash index is narrowing today.
Crop protection products are facing greater scrutiny within the Make America Healthy Again movement. AMVAC product development manager Wen Carter believes it is important to be an advocate for these tools.
We are working with the growers, the industry groups, to continue to advocate for the safe use of these products, and then work with our EPA to make sure they understand how these products are being used and how effective they are for our growers.
AMVAC partners with farm organizations to promote the responsible use of crop protection products.
As a unified front, we're much better than just the chemical organization going up there and trying to have a conversation with a vested interest, right? Because the grower organizations have the growers' well-being at heart, which we feel we do too as well. So us going up to D.C. together certainly puts a unified front and can show that we're all working in this together to continue to maintain these products that are so valuable for our growers.
Carter said it is important to support current chemistries while working on innovative products for the future. Reporting Agriculture's Business, you are listening to the Red River Farm Network.
Welcome to Inside Agriculture on the Red River Farm Network. National Cattlemen's Beef Association Senior Vice President of Government Affairs Ethan Lane says the cattle industry is watching the new world screwworm situation closely. He says the U.S. and Mexico are taking major steps to protect livestock health.
I think that we're doing all the things we could. I think everybody wants to see those things happen faster. They're moving dirt on dispersal facilities and more airfield in Texas. They just announced a facility down in Tampico in Mexico in conjunction with the Mexican government. That big multi-hundred million per week sterile fly facility in Texas is the brass ring. That's the thing we need to see moving to make sure we have the ammunition, quite frankly, to throw at these things when they get further north.
Lane says reopening cattle movements across the border will depend on Mexico meeting its commitments and USDA having confidence in the expanded screwworm prevention system.
It's fall in the United States and in North America, which means temperatures are coming down, which means flies aren't expanding as much, so we get a little bit of a breather probably going into the spring. Hopefully that time is used to really hit go on this stuff, right? And we'll see what the Secretary is able to do as far as getting the Mexicans to meet all those obligations on their side. That's a difficult thing to pull off. And then also figure out when it's appropriate to reopen that border using those protocols that were put in place last year, or earlier this year, I guess, in February, to kind of take a slower path for cattle to cross the border, about 7 days total for those cattle to be quarantined and viewed and treated, and then finally advance to the border when they're clear.
Checking quotes, December wheat Minneapolis is 15 cents lower to 565. Chicago December wheat's up 4.25 at 531.5. KC December hard red winter wheat's up 5 1/4 to 518 1/2. December corn 7 1/2 higher at 431. January soybeans are 7 1/2 higher as well, 1132 1/4. January canola in Winnipeg's up 3.10 per metric ton to 651.20 Canadian. On the cattle side, December live cattle are up 3.65 to 210.65. Feb live cattle up $5 to 212.32. January feeders 7.17 higher at 314.25. March feeders up 7.20. April feeders are 7.45 higher. December hogs up 172 to 80.17. Feb hogs 2.12 higher. April hogs up 2.22 at 85.17. You're listening to the Red River Farm Network.